This is 89.9 WWNO. I'm Janae Pierre, and it's time for All Things New Orleans. On today's show, we'll introduce you to our new education reporter, Jess Clark, and Councilman Jason Williams talks about some major shakeups with the Sewage and Water Board following a torrential rainstorm on Saturday. Then Cuban native Alexei Marti shares his new album, Bravacia. That's all coming up on All Things New Orleans, but first, here's one of NOLA Life's stories. Long before the women's liberation movement of the 60s and 70s, Marion Mayer Burkett became the first female lawyer in Louisiana. As a law student in the 1930s, the Baton Rouge native became accidentally entrenched in the turbulent era that was Huey P. Long's reign as governor. Mrs. Burkett passed away this June at the age of 104. And in this edition of NOLA Life Stories, we share this remembrance.
It's amazing how little trouble I had. I think I immediately indicated that if they wanted to have a fight with me because I was a woman, then I'm ready. My father thought he was in politics. But as things went on and when Huey came in, then everybody was involved in politics, come hell or high water, and I was up to my eyes.
Starting in life in this ramshackle house, Long ranted and raved his way into the chief executive's chair of the sovereign state of Louisiana.
How many men ever went to a body too and would let one man take off the table what's intended for 9/10 of the people to eat? The only way you'll ever be able to feed the balance of the people is to make that man come back and bring back some of that grub he ain't got no business.
He was never without his bodyguards, confessing to friends that he fully expected to die at the hands of an assassin when his time was up. His feuds were monumental, like the time that the mayor of New Orleans crossed swords with the fiery governor.
I spent my first year of law at LSU, and one day the dean of the law school called me in. Now, I didn't know what was this about. And when I got there, to my astonishment, he said, I asked you in because you're the only person around here I can talk to. I want to tell you, I'm considering murdering that son of a bitch. This is the dean of the law school. And he said, there's nobody around I can talk to. You're the only one that refuses to support him. That really convinced me I had to go to Tulane to escape Huey Long and all of that stuff going on in Baton Rouge, where we had martial law. You know, only two people could meet on the street. And there were actually some shots fired as if there was going to be a rebellion and so forth.
In Louisiana, Huey Long still reigned supreme, and for legions of his critics, he had these words.
And that confusion has destroyed and put many profitable enterprises further below the mark than they were to start with.
I can remember distinctly on the night that Huey got shot by his bodyguards, the word came on the radio, and I was in New Orleans with my sister, and at that time, a boyfriend who was driving. And we stopped for gas, and we heard that Huey had been shot. And with that, my sister, who was younger than I, went into hysterics. She cried. She cried. I knew she couldn't be crying because Huey was shot. He wasn't very pleasant in our family. Finally, we calmed her down, and she said, I know my daddy did it. I know my daddy did it. And there have been other stories that are very similar that I've heard since then.
Who gave a party at the Roosevelt Hotel? Like the whole North half of the state down there for free. People in the city had have their eyes bugging out, 'cause everyone looked just like me.
Well, I did well because, number one, I was topping my class at Tulane, and it may have convinced Eberhard Deutsch of Deutsch Kerrigan to employ me as the first woman employed by a law firm in the state, or I think in the United States, I'm not sure.
This NOLA Life Stories interview was conducted by Mark Caves for the Historic New Orleans Collection and produced for WWNO by Sarah Holtz.
Clap your hands now, people, clap now. Clap your hands now, people, clap your hands.
The news team here at WWNO is pleased to welcome a new member. Jess Clark is the station's new education reporter, and she's joining me now. Jess, welcome to the show, and welcome to WWNO.
Thanks, Janae. I'm really excited to be here.
We're happy to have you, Jess. I'm telling you, you're part of the team now. I want you to tell us about yourself and the previous work that you've done that led you here to New Orleans Public Radio.
Well, I am the new WWNO education reporter. I'll be covering K-12 schools here in New Orleans and Southeast Louisiana. I most recently came from North Carolina Public Radio. I was based out of Durham, Raleigh, Chapel Hill. It's an area known as the Triangle. It's kind of in the middle of the state of North Carolina.
Okay.
I did that for 2 years, focusing on education policy, and it was great. And now I'm excited to bring that kind of understanding that I gained over in North Carolina down here to a totally different landscape of education reporting.
Jess, what motivated you to report on education?
Well, it was actually the job that opened up at the station in North Carolina. Okay. I always wanted to be in public radio, and that's a position that opened up, but actually it was kind of the perfect fit for me. Education has always been a really interesting topic that I've enjoyed reading about and learning more about. My mom was a school teacher. She taught middle school science for about 15, maybe 20 years, actually in private schools in Kentucky, which is where I'm from. And so I really had a sense of the challenges she faced as a teacher, albeit in a private school and not in a public school, which is a different type of, there are different challenges there, but still many of the same challenges. Mm-hmm. And it's just been a really interesting way to look at a lot of different issues that our society faces, whether that's poverty, that definitely has an interesting intersection with education, race, socioeconomic status. A lot of the issues that we're facing across society really stand out when it comes to reporting on education.
Yeah. And, you know, I know you've been busy researching the education system here in New Orleans, but have you noticed any similarities between the system here and the system in North Carolina where you were reporting previously?
Actually, this system is totally different than really any other system that I've encountered. Just the charter school landscape, the fact that almost every school in New Orleans is a charter is unlike anything that we have in North Carolina. So that's totally different. Also, the number of students here that go to private school is also really different than what we see in North Carolina, where by and large, most students go to public schools. I think there's probably a lot more trust in the public school system in North Carolina than perhaps there is here in New Orleans due to the history of the school board here. Although, you know, that seems to be changing. So it's an exciting time, definitely, to be covering this landscape here as it is in transition.
Yeah. Now, as a reporter, what are some of your goals in regards to covering education in New Orleans and Southeast Louisiana?
I think I really want to focus on equity. I think that's a really interesting topic, especially here in New Orleans, where we have a really big gap between those who have and those who don't have. And that plays out in the school system, I think, especially when you're looking at who can afford to send their kids to private school, who cannot afford to send their kids to private school, and what their options options are in the public schools. Are those kids being served? And, you know, how are they serving those kids? What does that education look like in the charter school environment? So that's definitely something I want to focus on. Also, this is a part of the country where the environmental impacts actually have a really interesting nexus with education, because, you know, the flooding here keeps kids out of school more days than in other places in the country.
And we just previously experienced that this
exactly,
weekend, right?
Exactly, yeah. I think there was only one school in New Orleans that had to close, and they only closed for a day. But, you know, last year, I think 250,000 students were out of school following the floods in, you know, in the Baton Rouge area in last August. So looking at how the environmental impacts of climate change and sea level rise and changing weather patterns, how those are affecting educational outcomes could be really interesting. So yeah. I'd like to get down into some of the districts, the coastal districts that are dealing with flooding on a regular basis, and seeing how that affects families' ability to get their kids to school.
Mm-hmm. Now, everyone who listens or everyone who works here, they're characterized as public radio nerds. But aside from that, what do you like to do in your spare time?
Well, I'm trying to start running again, which has been difficult here in August in New Orleans.
Yeah, good luck.
So that's something I'm trying to pick back up on. I sing, mostly like classical music, but I
wow.
have been in choirs
okay.
for most of my life. So I'm on the hunt for a choir to join here in New Orleans.
Okay.
Probably shouldn't be too hard, although I don't know that I'll be able to make choirs here in New Orleans, since it's such like a, you know, there's musicians everywhere.
Yeah.
Auditions will probably be a little tougher here. I like to eat, and so I guess I'm in the right city for that.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I love to try new restaurants. I love to explore. Always on the hunt for a new restaurant, a new bar, or something
well,
like that.
Well, I'm sure New Orleans will keep you busy aside from working here.
I'm sure it will. Already has.
Jess Clark is the new education reporter here at WWNO. Welcome again, and thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Janae.
The New Orleans City Council had an emergency meeting earlier this week to discuss failures in the city's pumping systems. Councilman-at-Large Jason Williams grilled Jill Becker with the Sewage and Water Board to determine what went wrong.
You said you knew 8 pumps were broken. You said you've always known that, because it would be foolish for the Sewage and Water Board not to know how many pumps were broken during hurricane season.
That is
so when
correct.
We initially told the public, and I'm saying we, I'm meaning not me, I mean Sewage and Water Board, mm-hmm. told the public that all the pumps were working to full capacity, that was just complete fabrication at that time.
I think the intention of that statement was to imply that all of those stations were operating at the capacity that they had available to them.
Joining me now is Councilman Jason Williams. Councilman, welcome.
Hey, Janae, how are you?
I'm great. So officials said over the weekend that the pumping systems were working at full capacity, but we know now that that's not true. What's your reaction to the misinformation that came out of the Sewage and Water Board?
Well, it's frustrating, but I can't say that I was surprised. The first time that I heard the press conference saying that everything was working in full capacity was in complete contradiction to what I was hearing from the neighbors that I was visiting in the affected area. And honestly, Janae, think about it. Nothing ever works 100% of the time. So the suggestion that it was 100% just seemed overly optimistic for the city of New Orleans. And it was very frustrating, because the people who were affected and lost cars and had damage to property and who were stranded, they just deserve the truth.
Right. Now, the city council met earlier this week, and just before that hearing began, we learned of Cedric Grant's retirement. How did that play out at the hearing?
Well, Mr. Grant was part of the emergency meeting I called, of course, because he was the director of the Sewage and Water Board. And we had other agencies and departments, Homeland Security, Public Works. And when Cedric Grant was called, he read a statement, and in his introductory statement, he announced that he had been given bad information that was misleading and inaccurate, and that he had related to the public. And because of that, he was going to resign to not be a distraction to putting things back in place. So that was his opening salvo at the emergency meeting, we call it. Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that misinformation, there's now some shakeup at the Sewage and Water Board. We know that two officials from the Sewage and Water Board have resigned, and there are other actions that may be taken against the Sewage and Water Board for misleading the public. Do you agree that some action should be taken there?
Well, I mean, this is about accountability. You know, regardless of how much rain fell, the public always deserves absolute honesty about what was actually going on, and that didn't happen. I was misled. The people were misled. In fact, we still haven't gotten the complete truth. You know, yesterday's hearing, that was a very thorough cross-examination of Mr. Becker, and it took him over an hour to get to the fact that one of our pumping stations was only working at 52% mm-hmm. of its capacity. So, you know, there's consequences for everything.
With all this happening, people in the community have lost confidence in the Sewage and Water Board. What has to be done to rebuild that?
Well, number one, we've got to rebuild and repair the broken pumps to make sure all of our pumps are operational. But to your question, we've got to do even more to rebuild the breach of trust that exists right now between everyone in the city and the Sewage and Water Board, which means we're going to have to take some extra measures to be even more transparent. For one, I think we need to set up a system so that any citizen can hop online and see what pumps are operational, can see what pumps have been turned on, and if the pumps are in need of repair, to have all that information in real time be accessible to the community, maybe even putting a light, a flashing light at the top of every pumping station. So if you live close by, you can see that your pump has been, in fact, been turned on. Because it's not enough just to say that the pumps are working. Someone also has to turn that pump on at the right time, not after there's been significant flooding. So maybe some measures like that could help rebuild trust. It's not going to be easy, but we have to do it.
During your city council meeting this week, we heard from constituents who are concerned that if we flood during a simple August rainstorm, how will we make it if a hurricane were to hit the city?
You know, that's the same statement I made at Sunday's press conference when we called the emergency meeting. That was a lot of rain, but, you know, we're probably going to see more rain like that in the next few weeks, if not today.
Right.
Lakeview flooded, and we learned of the compromised situation of their pump for Mr. Becker, and that had never, ever been disclosed. So I think between now and the end of hurricane season, myself and all of my colleagues will be treating this issue as an emergency issue, and we want the mayor to do the same in terms of any allocations of funds or bids or whatever process we have to go through to get repairs done to pumps needs to be expedited, because this is truly an emergency situation. We can't wait for another storm, and we certainly can't wait till after hurricane season.
Councilman Jason Williams, thanks so much for joining me today.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
Jazz musician Alexei Marti has released his debut album entitled Travesía. The Havana Cuban native is having a release party at the Prime Example later this month, but he joins me now to share some of his music and to chat a bit about his career. Alexei, welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So you were born and raised in a small neighborhood in Havana. Tell us how you ended up in New Orleans.
Well, I just moved to New Orleans 10 years ago. I went to the jazz program, right here in, you know, at the music building.
Okay.
So they got a beautiful program. So pretty much I learned everything I know about jazz in that program. It's a really good program.
And the city just had that hold on you and you had to stay.
Yes. This city is magical. It's very similar to Cuba in many aspects, many things.
Let's talk more about those similarities and how they come through in your music.
Well, the music is about people. People breathe. I eat music all the time, and music is the most important part in New Orleans and Cuba. You know, we are music all the time.
You mentioned that you were participating in the jazz program at UNO.
Yes.
But what do you concentrate on playing?
Well, in jazz program, I had to learn piano, you know, because piano is a very important instrument for compose. And for percussion play, I think it is very important for any musician to learn play piano, you know, to understand what's going on.
And recently I learned that the piano is actually a percussion instrument.
Of course, you know, if you go into the real piano, you have a string, you have a hammer who hit the string.
Mm-hmm.
It's percussion, so all the time you like hit the key hit the string. So it's a percussion instrument.
Okay. And now that we're speaking about percussion instruments, you actually started at age 7 playing congas.
Yeah, I used to be playing percussion in my grandma's house for religion purpose. You know, in Cuba, we practice Yoruba religion. Some people call it Santeria. But, you know, it's like in the United States, you go into church, it's in home.
Yeah. I understand. I know you do too here in New Orleans. But you just finished up your debut album, Travesia, and you've been on the music scene a while now. Tell me why now with this album?
Well, you know, I wasn't ready yet to do this big step in my life. So now I feel like I was ready to do it. Mm-hmm. So I did it.
What can folks expect from this album?
Well, you will see Afro-Cuban Latin jazz, you know, but a different flavor. Like, I know the drums, like a bata drums. I mix a little bit Cuban music with New Orleans. So it's a little bit of everybody from everywhere.
Let's talk a bit more about those similarities between New Orleans jazz and Latin jazz.
Well, you know, it's very rhythmically. It's about percussion. In Latin jazz, you have tumbadoras, bongo, bata, many African instruments involved in Latin jazz. It's more rhythmically. With Latin jazz, you can dance. Even we're expecting the musician to secure his instrument very well. But it's kind of like you get music from everywhere, from Brazil. You can make Latin jazz with music from Argentina, Haiti, Cuba. So it's a big wall around the Latin jazz.
How would you categorize your music?
World music.
World music.
Yes.
I like that. Alexei Marti, thanks so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Check out the album Travesia anywhere you get your music. Alexei Marti will be at the Prime Example on Thursday, August 31st. That's it for this week's edition of All Things New Orleans. I'm Janae Pierre. Follow me on Twitter at Miss Janae Pierre and feel free to tweet comments or questions. Would you like to suggest a guest or topic? Send an email to Janae at WWNO.org. That's JANAE at WWNO.org. Visit our website to check out previous shows and be sure to catch us next week. Right here on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans and 90.5 KTLN Thibodaux Houma. Thanks for joining us. Underwriting programming on WWNO New Orleans Public Radio is a great way to support this station. And it's also a very effective way to reach informed, civic-minded, and educated adults in the New Orleans region with information about your business, service, or organization. Find out how WWNO 89.9 FM can help grow your business by emailing underwriting at WWNO.org. WWNO's travel crew will explore Italy in October, but your time to sign up is running out. Don't let this unique opportunity slip by. The crew will enjoy sights and performances available only on this trip. To learn more and to book seats, go to WWNO.org/travel.